Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 19 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Today, Steve and I are going to cover the weekly news. First, what we're going to discuss is the latest movie review in a bit of a slow week. So, Steve got to see Anna, which many of you did not. So, listen to his take on that movie there. we've got a quick conversation around DC is DC has now shut down its Vertigo arm of its comics, and we're glad to talk about that, as well as we're going to talk about J.J. Abrams diving into comics himself.
Yeah, after that, we're going to go into outer space a little bit. There was some good Mars news and a Elon tweet fail that we get into. And then we kind of go off on a tangent on some nerd talk that we just couldn't help ourselves to get into.
So stick around. It's an interesting hour for you.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, welcome back, nerds, to episode 19 of the Nerd Cantina Show. So this week, first thing, Steve, how about movie reviews?
Yeah, I go see movies every week, so we'll start it off with the movies again. This week, I did not opt to go see Toy Story 4 and sift through the kid madness this weekend. I'll probably take my daughter sometime this week and maybe review it. I'm sure there's plenty of reviews up there, so if you're a big Woody and Buzz fan, you can find your critique somewhere else. But let's be honest, if you're a Woody and Buzz fan, you're gonna go see the fucking movie anyway. So what do you need my shitty opinion for? But I did go see that movie Anna, the espionage action flick with that new blonde model. They were hyping that movie in every movie that I've seen for the last like 2 months. That trailer was up running before every movie I seen. They didn't really do a big marketing push on like YouTube or national television or anything. So a lot of people didn't, unless you're an avid movie goer, you really didn't know much about this movie. So I wanted to go and give it a review to put it out there in case it was good or horrible, to let our readers and our audience know. And it was borderline a pretty good movie. They structure it very Tarantino-esque. A sequence happens and you're kind of out of the loop, and then it gives you a 3 years ago, and they go back and show you the causation of that sequence, and then they move on to another. It's told in a very choppy kind of way like that. So it does lead to a little bit more suspense on where the plot line's going, but it also does distract you a bit from like really kind of getting into the film. There is a few points where they're developing the Anna character and it kind of drags a bit. Because they do that Tarantino kind of like cutbacks, it gets like ramped up really fast and then bogs down really, really to a slow pace, then ramps up really fast and then bogs down. So that kind of takes a little bit away from the movie. But all in all, the action was good. I liked the storyline. Heather Mirren plays like her Russian handler. And like, I almost didn't even realize it was Heather Mirren until the end of the movie. Like, because you're used to... Yeah, or Ellen. Yeah, my bad. She's usually, you know, the blonde, British, proper, you know, actress. And she played like a really gritty, dark-haired Russian, you know, in this movie. And like, in the whole movie, I couldn't put my finger on like, wait, who is that? You know, and by the end, I was like, holy shit. So she did a really good job. There are sequences that feel very Whisk-esque, you know, there's some really good action in it. If you're a fan of like espionage movies, if you really like that whole, especially it being in the Cold War era, so the movie takes place basically in the 80s, that really works well in its favor, because nowadays if you have like a modern day CIA kind of espionage movie, everything's gadgets and doodads and all kinds of high tech shit, and it kind of, that's where your focus goes and you don't really get into the characters as much. With them putting this movie in the 80s, Like, there's a point in the movie where, like, they're talking on the old Nokia cell phones. That, like, that's, like, the cutting-edge technology is them on that old Nokia that we grew up with. So that, I think, did the movie a pretty good favor in really getting you sucked into the plot. But overall, I gave it 3.5 stars. It was almost a 4-star movie without some minor complications, but I definitely think people should at least watch it once. If you don't go to the theater, if you're not looking to drive out and sit in a theater and see it, at least give it a whirl when it comes out on digital or HBO or something. It's definitely worth a viewing.
Well, you were talking about with it being set in the 80s. I can't remember which author we talked about that with before. And it really gets to a point with all the technology and stuff we have that if you're going to have like suspense-driven things, you almost have to go back in time because it's like a modern day. You look at the screen, if you put it in modern times, you watch the screen and people are struggling with things. It's like, hey guys, just Google it. Like, he'll find an answer. Like, just, what are you struggling with these simple decisions for? Just Google it.
It's not funny because they had files, you know, people are reading files, you know, and it's like, oh, just Google them. Just Google them.
It'll get to a point where, all movies will have, if you put it in modern times, so much technology and information will be available to them that it's, you can't have the struggle of trying to solve a problem or whatever else when it's like, what are you wasting time on?
I do think
for?
You're going to see that becoming a trend in movies. So that's the reason why the Stranger Things guys made a sci-fi, you know, show in the 80s. They said flat out, we didn't want all this technology involved. We wanted this to be a very character-driven show. And that you can't tell a modern story without smartphones and computers and the internet. Like, you can't do it. It is so woven into our everyday life that if you want to highlight, you know, character drama and things like that without the modern day amenities, you know, you want someone to have to do some research. You want someone to have to do some building and modern day technology really kind of takes that away from films. So I think you're going to see that play out a lot in future movies and television shows. There's going to be a lot of retro. And it's not really for the nostalgia kick. It's just, it's a better way to tell a character-driven story.
Yeah. And then, really, you don't have, I don't know if you plan on seeing, Yesterday is the only thing coming out this week. So maybe it's a
slow
week.
I kind of do. I'm a big Beatles fan. You know, it's really just, it would, you know, like, do people really want to know my opinion on a movie about an Indian dude singing all the Beatles songs? Like, do we not all know how this movie's kind of going to play out? Like, I don't see there being any twists and turns with it. You know, I do breakfast, you know, on Sundays like our dad used to do and play the Beatles. You know, I listen to the Beatles all the time. I really don't need to hear the music on a movie theater sound system, like, just to do it. So, like, yeah, I was really torn on, you know, I don't know what I'm going to see this week. I don't really know what releases this week. Spider-Man comes out next week.
It's really so just that's, yesterday. That's the big one. There's that horror movie, and Yesterday comes out this week, and then Spider-Man next week. So, it's a lull. There isn't a big blockbuster coming out for sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Toy Story will have another week at the top.
Yeah. You know, and I'm... that's one I might go see just because, I have a lot of friends that are hating it and a lot of people that are loving Toy Story, the people that did see it. You know, some people are just sick of... I had one buddy say it was, again, it was like the Captain Marvel of Pixar, you know, where it's just like shitting on men and... And he's like, so that his comments kind of piqued my curiosity on going and seeing if it's like, it's like, man, they just made Woody look like a moron and Bo has to save the day. So it's like, oh, we're just dumb men that can't do anything without women. And I was just like, oh, man, do we really?
there's a fun clip of, I think it's Tom Hanks on Jimmy Kimmel. And like Tom Hanks reaches into his jacket pocket to pull out his his Disney approved notes on what he can say about the movie. And like he does it. And you know, there's Disney execs just like, fucking Tom Hanks. There's nothing we can do about this guy. Like, yeah, what are you gonna do?
Fire Tom Hanks? Yeah. You're gonna is the internet gonna cancel Tom Hanks at any point? I don't think so.
But he pulls out of his pocket as they're talking about the movie. He pulls out of his pocket like questions that Jimmy Kimmel's supposed to be asking him, and how, and like the narrative from his sheet that he's supposed to be reading about how Bo has always been a strong character, and she is not just strong in this movie. She's always been a strong character, and people have not recognized her as a strong character.
And that's what I mean when all the, you know, I hate trying to label her, but all the SJWs want to come and say how great these Captain Marvel movies and you should just eat it and stuff like that. And that there's not an agenda. It's just a movie of strong women and we're attacking your masculinity and that's why you didn't like it. How can you have that argument when Tom Hanks has a pocket full of fucking notes from Disney about how he should highlight the strength of a woman? And it, like you don't, if you have a strong woman character, you don't fucking need notes to say on Jimmy Kimmel to promote that. You just watch the fucking movie and it comes across like that. You cannot say that Disney is not pushing a far left agenda with a lot of these movies, you know, trying to really lock in that female audience. And like, I get it. It's all demographics. Like people, you know, we've been trying to get every audience in to see these movies for decades. They're taking a more, I guess, politicized approach at doing it. So now rather than just, you know, creating rom-coms, you know, and like love interests in movies and hitting the heartstrings of women to get them into the theater. Now let's rile these ladies up and really get them charged to come into the theater and spend some money. You know, it's all a marketing ploy, and you know, I don't know if they truly believe in what they're doing.
I think it is just that. I don't know. I'm sure somebody really cares about, I don't know, equal rights, feminist movement type of thing, and they're really trying to highlight that. In the end, it's just a money grab. I truly believe it's a company.
Well, then at the same time, you know, I do recognize that they are trying to almost fix a problem. So I posted the Anna review yesterday, and you know, me and one other person were commenting in the comment section about, you know, the feel of the movie and stuff, and then someone just was just like, oh, a female John Wick movie? No thanks. And it's like, man, like, really, you're going to write off a movie just because it has a female lead? You know, and as long as there's people that think like that, like, you can't really blame a Disney for trying to shove it down their throat. You know what I mean? Like, it's... Yeah. You know, you have to at least acknowledge that there are still a large section of men that are just like, oh, no, go make a sandwich. Like, you couldn't, there's no way that girl would take down all these dudes and da 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 da. And like, and they just have that kind of blinders vision when it comes to what is what in society. So you kind of, I don't know, man. It's just so hard to navigate this space nowadays. It's just so tough.
It is. I don't, like I said, I think it's all driven by money. You know, another example of things being driven by money. That do you care that Avengers is releasing some special time, which is probably just a new end cutscene? Or
I'm almost 100% positive they just filmed a 5-minute scene while they were shooting the Spider-Man movie, and they're just going to shove it at the end to integrate Spider-Man and Tony Stark's relationship again.
But are you going to go sit through another 3 hours to find that 5 minutes?
Fuck no. Fuck no. Someone can tell me what that shit was about.
Like, I'm looking forward to whoever sacrifices their time. Whoever's going to go see it. People are going to go see it. The people who've already gone into the theater five times.
There's a dude that's seen
it
like 130 times now. Yeah. Like
so whoever's already seen it all those times, they're going to see it again. They'll post something on YouTube. I'll give them a view. Good on you. Appreciate you summing up what I missed, but I really don't
care. Thanks for wasting 3 hours of your life, because I got better shit to do, pal.
I mean, I don't necessarily have better things to do, but I do know I don't care to go see 3 hours
of
that movie.
I for sure have better things to do. I cannot cram everything I want to do into a 24-hour day as it is to sacrifice 3 hours of it to see a mediocre movie that I already seen to get an added 2 to 3 minute bonus footage of something that is inconsequential to the plot, inconsequential to progressing anything in the MCU, most likely. No thanks, man. No thanks.
You got to watch. So Neil deGrasse Tyson, he did a Star Talk like 4 days ago, and he talked about, he did it with a guest, and it was just 45 minutes of them talking about Avengers Endgame.
Really?
And they went full spoilers. And you got to hear it. Like, he doesn't shit on Endgame too much on like the science part, because he just talks about, like, he at some point says, like, as a scientist, he just shuts off his science brain when he watches these movies to some degree, because they're all abusing science. He's like, as long as they're consistently abusing science, he's okay with it. Like, as long as whatever rules of science they create. And he said that's what, that was part of his problem, is that they're just not consistent in the way that they abuse the science.
Set up your science rules and then adhere to those science rules for the entire length of the movie. Don't change your science rules in the middle of the movie to fit your plot.
But anybody who hasn't gone and seen that, if you're a fan or you didn't like Avengers Endgame, you should go watch Neil deGrasse Tyson talk about it. There's a point in it where he just goes on like a 5-minute rant about Captain Marvel, and about how just ridiculous the her whole like how strong she is and how ridiculously overpowered she is, and then at times like she's insignificant, and it's completely inconsistent in the way they use her. It's pretty funny.
I love me some NGT.
Oh yeah,
it's definitely on my list of things to do now today.
So yeah, definitely worth a watch. But to progress through our show here,
to get away from movies, we'll slide into some comic news.
But it transitions in maybe a little bit of social justice type stuff with the cancellation of Vertigo.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's. So the way they made DC's press release made it seem is that they're canceling Vertigo to just bring everything back under the DC bubble. So they've had, I think, for 14 years, I might be wrong, but for over a decade now, they've released all their like heavy adult kind of like stories under the Vertigo tag, which kind of worked, you know what I mean? Like, you know that you have the backing of the major comic book company. Once it had that like Vertigo tag on it, you would know what kind of story to expect. You know, you know that it's going to be graphic, it's going to be violent, it's going to have some language, you know, some scenes that aren't really meant for kids. And a lot of people would gravitate towards that because of, you know, I'm an adult, I'm a grown-ass man, I don't need to be babied, so I'm going to read these Vertigo comics. Now that they're pulling everything back in under the DC tag and going with like an age recommendation scale, you don't really know what you're getting. You know what I mean? If it says 18 and over, like, you're not really sure what's going to be in it, what kind of tone it's going to have, you know, if it's going to have the Vertigo tone or if it's just not for a 13, you know, Disney's view of, or not Disney, but, you know, like the rating scale of like these family orientated companies of what they view an 18-year-old or a 13-year-old should have isn't really society's view of what a 13 or 18-year-old can handle. So I don't know where this is going to head and where it's going to lead.
Yeah, I mean, DC has their Black Label or whatever else that they're going to have, like their Harley Quinn comic, which is mature in nature, so they still have their black label, and that's essentially, I think, what they're gonna roll out all of their more adult material under. But
yeah, well, they said too, well, with them reining it in, some story arcs are gonna continue, and some are just gonna cancel. You know, so how like Vertigo was like a separate division, and they had like the free reign to kind of like publish what they wanted.
It was their imprint arm that allowed creators and authors to essentially get picked up, but then they had the ability to run their own stories separate from the meddling of DC essentially directing the storyline. So now,
let's be honest, when DC meddles and stuff, it goes so well. It goes so well.
So now you're losing the arm that allowed for Watchmen to happen, allowed for Why the Last Man to take place, V for Vendetta. You've got some significant comics.
Yeah, great comics.
You have them, and then now we're supposed to trust you're still going to have that level of quality, but under the brand of DC. Yeah, I get Vertigo was always a part of DC, but it wasn't associated.
But like, yeah, the head DC bigwigs weren't really paying attention to it as much. You know what I mean? They were just kind of like, are we getting sales? Oh, we're getting sales. Okay, cool. Just keep going. Whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. And now all these ideas, all this, it's all going to get ran through the same boardroom that gave us Martha. So like, I'm not too optimistic about this.
And so the reason why I said this might be a victim of social justice stuff, and it's not necessarily social justice, it's just the rebranding or the protecting. Vertigo gets beat up all the time by different articles and different petitions to boycott, and because, you know, there's a lot of adult shit in there, and there's rape scenes that exist in there. There's Batman penises that exist in Vertigo. There's
blue dongs and Watchmen.
Blue dongs, yeah. There's a lot of shit that there's graphic sex. There is rape. There is gory murder. There's a lot of things that take place in Vertigo that trigger people to boycott, that trigger people to sign petitions, that trigger people to do things. And it just seems that the cancellation of this, I don't believe it that it makes good business sense, right? I don't, or it makes good business sense in the sense that they want to drag it all under their umbrella to bring everything back together. Yeah, I think it's just a rebranding issue that
DC,
they just
had,
don't want
some
the
like deniability, you know, in cases like that. You know, so if you had a pretty brutal rape scene in a comic and you got some pushback, they could always just say, "Well, that's our Vertigo division. We don't fucks with what they're doing. They're their own entity. So send your hate mail to Vertigo."
Yeah.
Now they don't have that deniability anymore. So now all that hate mail is going to go straight to the heads up, and they're going to have to make that call.
Which is why I think this is significant, that really the only place then for that you're going to see kind of mainstream comics that are going to still do that adult level stuff is going to be Image, because DC's not going to do this anymore. DC's not going to have that level of kind of comic brutality and comic.
Yeah,
this might be
good for like publishers like Image and Valiant. My fear is going to happen is that DC's going to cancel a few good titles, but they're going to still maintain the rights to those characters and stuff. So like, it's not like, you know, depending on how the contract is, you know, if they cancel a good title, I doubt that writer is going to be able to take that title over to an Image or, you know, a Valiant and pick it back up where it left off. DC is going to claim, you know, trademark ownership and copyright ownership, and they're just going to say, no, this motherfucker's dead. Go think of something else. You're fired.
I don't think this was for a plus, for a benefit of the DC comics or the quality of the comics coming out. I really think it was just Warner Brothers, DC coming to a point where they could no longer tolerate the bad press and being associated to some of the brutality.
I thought it had
something
to do with like them wanting the credit. So not only do they want to wash themselves of the bad that comes out of Vertigo, but they also want the credit for the good that comes out of Vertigo. Like I think they were the fear was is that there's a lot of people out there that don't know Vertigo's a wing of DC, and you know, so some Vertigo fans are talking shit about DC, and DC's like, that's us, man. Like, that's us. Like, we're putting out good shit you're reading. It's just under a different brand, you know. So I think, you know, which makes sense, is that they want recognition of those brands, you know. And So I don't know.
That's just a matter of putting DC Vertigo, right? That's just put your name first. It's, I don't know. I really think it's, maybe this goes into the fact that I have complete skepticism towards anything that DC is doing.
Rightly so.
And think that, you know, maybe this is just more of what we were talking about last week, which Rob Liefeld just saying how DC is on its way driving off a cliff. And this is just another turn towards the cliff,
third
right?
Gear. This is just them shifting into third gear, heading that direction.
This is just another arm of that, where they already suck at movies and stuff. They're already failing on the TV side with streaming services that nobody wanted or whatever else. And then now one of their critically acclaimed arms that publishes some of the better crafted stories that probably have, you know, good adaptations for movies and things in the future, they're now shutting down that arm where creators and authors can make their own kind of unobstructed content. So it just, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know DC, where the number crunches, where the number crunching comes into this, but you would think they would, you know, appreciate having that anonymity to put out some risky content in the hopes that they get another Watchmen, in the hopes that they get another V for Vendetta. Why The Last Man's been attempted to be picked up and converted a few times now. It'll eventually make it up. So why shut down a division that has obviously attracted some high quality writing and production? I don't know. If you're a writer of the next V for Vendetta, I don't know if you pitch it to DC. You know, like, I don't know. It's very, we'll see where this goes. But like Lee Field said, they're pedal to the metal, you know, headed towards the canyon right now.
Either way, I think it's good news for like Image and Valiant. I think that's the safe space for them. For people that might have, you know, tried to pitch Vertigo or tried to fall under that brand, and where do they go now? Are they really going to go under DC Black Label or DC whatever they're calling it? Probably not. I'd say.
And it also pushes people more towards Felipe's model too.
Oh yeah, doing Kickstarter.
You got a good idea? Just, man, fund it yourself. Crowdfund it, you know, and put it out there and get all the credit. You know, why even give any to DC?
Yeah.
So it's the landscape's changing every day. It seems like, you know, what we knew as to be the norm is going away very fast. You know, technology is reshaping our lives drastically as every day, every hour goes by. And this is just another, I think, you know, fallout
to keep in comic news. We can talk about, yeah, some Marvel news with JJ.
Yeah, I'm a big JJ Abrams fan. I don't mind him writing a comic story. He's gonna take a new Spider-Man number one. He's writing it with his son, you know, which doesn't appeal to me necessarily. It really just makes me think, you know, must be fucking nice when your dad's JJ Abrams and just pitch a Spider-Man story. You know, like every kid growing up reading comics has their own stories in their head, but this dude just gets to, you know, pitch it to the god of Disney right now get it published.
If you go to Henry Abrams' IMDb page, it pretty much just says nepotism. I think that's actually like what the term is. It goes, his whole thing is just like he's a production assistant on Star Wars episode 7. Course he was.
Yeah,
no shit. That means he got coffee for dad. This is pure nepotism. I found it hilarious that his 12-year-old looking son, who's probably in his 20s, but dude looks crazy young, in their press release. I don't care if he writes. Why does he need to be a part of the reboot of the new episode one or issue one of
He pitched something to his dad at dinner, and his dad was like, "Oh, it's a decent idea, and I'm going to give my son some credit for it, put him down as a writer." Now he's got that on his resume. It's not that like having the last name Abrams couldn't get the kid far enough. Now we just need to pad his resume and make him a published writer in Marvel Comics, and, you know, take that opportunity away from some dude that's actually painstakingly gone through the grinder, you know, to get his work out.
Now, comic aside, regardless whether it's going to be an interesting story or whatever, the release of this was just so poorly done. There was so much negative blowback against Marvel in the way that they released it, starting with the number four, the web number four, which was supposed to start the countdown, but they didn't tell anybody what it meant. So
when I started seeing the countdown, I thought it had to do with Far From Home.
So there was so much speculation around it that it was a hint, because it was said that it was going to be a comic release. So they just had the web number four, and then you get all kinds of people thinking that was going to be Spider-Man 4, as in like Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 4 comic adaptation of it, continuing his story, because I guess there's a lot of fans of that I don't know. Spider-Man 3, I think, should have ended anybody's fandom in the Tobey Maguire realm.
Well, I mean, I'm sure the world is still clamoring for a jazz hands Spider-Man.
Yeah, but apparently there was, because when that 4 came out, there was apparently a lot of people excited that was going to be a comic adaptation of the continuation of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. Then they released the web number 3, and CB Sapolsky's on there just talking about like, oh, you mean that we weren't doing a Fantastic Four Spider-Man thing, and we're not doing a Spider-Man 4 comic adaptation? It's like, fuck you, CB. Like, you can't be the dude coming in there trolling everybody else that you just got hyped for no fucking reason with this terrible press release. And then they just count their way down to make everybody wait essentially fucking 5 full days to what? Just see a 5-minute clip of JJ and his son talk about, hey, we're going to do a Spider-Man comic. That was the worst. That was the absolute fucking worst way Marvel can come out and release that information. That could have just easily been a simple press release.
You know, for me, it was good news, but yeah, they hyped it like it was this next big event, and it's like, no, you got a good writer writing a comic, a Spider-Man comic, you know, one of the 18 fucking Spider-Man titles that Marvel releases every fucking month, you know, like, cool. Yeah, like, and it's not like it was bad news, but let's not act like, you know, fucking, yeah, it's the reboot of the Fantastic Four movies
I don't think this is the thing CB was talking about a couple months ago when he was saying how they're going to sell a million comics, how they were going to have a run that was going to sell a million comics. I don't think this one's doing it. I think this is still going to probably be just like a normal comic run, which is going to have 10,000 sales.
They are hitting it out of the park, though. Like, so one of my favorite artists, Olivier Copiel, is doing all the cover art. So that might get me to buy a few of these covers, because I'm a huge Copiel fan. JJ's a great writer. I have no problem with anything JJ tries to do. Yeah, he's had some misses here and there, you know, but the guy puts out a lot of content, and I would say the majority of his work speaks for itself. It's high quality. So
you know, what we already have, though, is the movie industry just stealing everything from the comics on the back end, just taking everything from the comics and turning it into movies, but it's showing no real success to the comics. And now they're just trying to reverse engineer that formula and have somebody from the movie industry hopefully bring in sales to the comics. Maybe it works. I don't know.
This could be like a JJ bucket list thing too. You know, JJ could have just grown up writing comics. He's made all these movies. He's bailing Disney out with the Star Wars franchise. And when they came to him and they were like, JJ, save us from RJ. Like, we need the JJ, not the RJ.
And he said,
I'll do it. I'll do it, but only if you let me make episode 9. I get to do at least one Marvel comic, and like, who knows over the next 5 years what JJ is going to be pushing out under the Disney bubble that he just cashed in that boardroom meeting when they're just like, save us, JJ, save us. And he was like, I want a Mickey Mouse Tesla. I want, who knows the laundry list of shit he asked for when he agreed to come back after they were like, no, you did good on episode 7. It was a good homage, and we're, you know, you set up some really good building blocks for us to go forward with the Star Wars franchise, but we really don't need you after here. Like, you can go ahead and do your other projects. We're good. And then they hire fucking Rain Johnson and just shits the fucking bed all over with The Last Jedi, and just like, oh, fuck, JJ, you know, tail between the legs, head down, JJ, fix our franchise. So I who knows, this might have been a JJ bucket list thing rather than a Marvel trying to seek him out. This might have been him saying, no, you want me to do shit, I gotta have this.
Like, maybe who the fuck knows? I think it's Marvel just grasping at straws trying to boost comic sales, and they're going to do.
How much are they going to pay a J.J. Abrams to write a motherfucking Spider-Man comic? You know, this thing isn't being done for the money. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no way they're spending that kind of money on a Spider-Man title for J.J. You know, this is, it could be, yeah, him saying, like, flat out, I'll do the Star Wars movie, but my son gets to write a comic.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. To me, it seems cheap. The way they announced it was just cheap. Just this 5-day buildup to just say you got a new writer. And yeah, got it. The guy's got some notoriety to him. Did that need to be a 5-day build? Did that need to be a fucking, like, I don't know. It's a cheap ploy.
I think we're in the day and age of cheap ploys. I don't know.
Yeah.
Society's getting dumber by the minute. I think there's something in the water. It's the lead pipes or something. And we're all just so easily pleased nowadays with content. I don't know if it's because there's so much more content out there with the internet and YouTubes and, you know, yeah, but, all, you know,
but you're one of, you, 500 you admittedly are one channels. Of the idiots. You're the one who's saying, like, I'm going to probably buy it. I'm excited for it. And it's
that's only because, yeah, it's JJ. You know what I mean? I'll give it a shot.
Well,
you
same. Know, so that's
no sweat off my ass to read a comic, you know, and see if it's good.
But
it's kind of what I do.
It just validates how easily we do get swayed. Well, just attach a name to it and.
Just because I'm going to read it does not mean that I am all gung-ho about it or, you know, that the minute I read it, just because JJ wrote it, I'll instantly love it before I even get through the fourth page. You know, yeah. Like, I still try to stay objective. But you know, my point is just that you look at Abrams' history and there's no reason to believe that this isn't going to be something of quality. Did it deserve the hype? No, not really. It you know, it didn't really need to be. It wasn't that big of a nerd news. But at the same time, yeah, I seen it with Endgame, man. They just, like, people just ate that up. And if you had anything to say bad, not even bad about that movie, just anything like, you know, I really didn't like that or that didn't really work for me, you were the moron. This is just like. You have to eat it up. Like it was Endgame, yo. Like, how could you not love every minute of it? Like, it's Endgame. It's like, well, yeah, it's Endgame. Okay, it was a movie. Like, it was all right. It had some good moments, but they did some bad things in that movie. I can say that. No, you can't. I'm gonna go see it 130 times, and I'm gonna go see it again for 3 minutes of extra footage. You know, I made the joke that the extra three minutes of footage was going to be Captain Marvel splitting the check at the end of a date, you know, in the end credit scene for female empowerment. You know, but I feel like the mass audience nowadays, they just, you know, if it worked for them in the past, it's automatically going to work for them now. They, you know, if it's part of something I have an emotional attachment to, I'm instantly going to give it credibility and defend it without dissecting it or having an objective opinion on it. I find that to be more of a trend nowadays than ever before.
It's definitely more of a trend. It's definitely heading that direction. It's difficult.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to have an opinion nowadays, really, on anything, you know, or an original opinion. You know, if your opinion doesn't match what the Twitterverse is trying to fucking tell you what your opinion should be, it's a really tough time to be able to stand on your own. Thank God I'm a stubborn-minded asshole and don't give a fuck what you think. You know, like, I think what I think, and you're not going to change my mind or tell me I'm wrong for it, and if I offend you, that wasn't my intent, so I really don't give a fuck. But, you know, yeah, we are living in this time where it's really hard to have your own opinion.
Yeah, no way to go from there, so...
Let's go to space. Let's go to outer space. Let's leave this planet like I've been wanting to do for years now. Let's just leave this planet. What's going down on Mars? What's going down on the red one?
Well, so there's two discoveries. So not entertainment news, because we do like to talk about tech shit and
Hashtag science.
Yeah. So, you know, there's two news releases really that hit at Mars this week. The first one was a new crater being discovered, which is kind of cool. So there's new images from the Mars orbiter that's been out there for, I don't know, 14, 15 years now.
They said like 14 years, and one of the most impressive things is they were like, well, if we get two out of it, we're happy. You know, if we get 2 years out of this machine out in deep space, like we're happy, you know, and it's been floating around that red planet now for like 15. Like, you talk about getting the bang for your buck. Like, NASA really hit it out of the park with that one.
Or NASA just really sets expectations super low.
Super low. set the bar low, so if you know, it's easy to hop that bar.
But so new crater was discovered that they estimate. You said it earlier. I don't remember the width of it, but it's not a significant. Like, you're talking about like a 2 meter.
They said like a meter and a half asteroid hit it. If they said for sure, our atmosphere would have just burned it up, ate it up. But because, you know, Mars doesn't have that atmosphere, this meter and a half rock hit Mars, and man, like. It's a little scary. It's a little scary what a human-sized rock can do to a planet landscape. You know, but the images they shared were amazing looking. You know, it pushed back a lot of the red dust from the Mars surface and kind of uncovered, you know, some of the surface area to give NASA a better look at what's kind of beneath, you know, that's the big theory now with Mars is like everything they want to know is underground.
It's under the red, the red top. Cause you get the images that it's kind of like a blackish bluish color in that crater. Now that it's the surface has been exposed or taken away, which is kind of cool. I don't know what
the hell's
down there.
You know, especially with this too, there are just people that are just dying to get to this planet to start drilling. You know, like they're like, well, I mean, can you really blame them? Think about the billions of dollars companies make a year from drilling our planet.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like about the level of destruction and shit we're willing to do to get resources from our planet. We will.
And we fucking live here. we fucking live here. You know, talk about don't shit where you eat. Yeah. Like we tear up this goddamn planet in search of gases and liquids that we can make money off of. You know, they had a little rock move some shit around on Mars and uncovered a bunch of shit. And you know there's companies and scientists that are just chopping at the bit to get their hands on, you know, the whatever sources are held deep beneath the surface of Mars. You know, the other story from Mars is what they found a huge methane pocket.
Yeah, the Mars rover, while it was just cruising around, I'm assuming picked up the highest concentration.
Another machine that is way overachieving for NASA.
But yeah, it's just cruising around and apparently picked up the highest concentration of methane that's ever been detected on Mars. Which, you know, methane being a gas here on Earth that is predominantly found due to biological material, biological breakdown. So.
There might be a chemist that can correct us if we're wrong, but for the most part of what I know of is that methane is mainly created from biodegrading, you know, substances. So, you know, to have a huge pocket there without having some form of, you know, biological life form prior would be one interesting to find out how that methane was created from the jump off. Cause you know, if we come to discover that it was created by some other way, we could possibly produce our own methane without having to use, you know, composts and stuff like that. It once again, you know, we've been around here millions of years. I don't find it hard to believe that at some point something might have lived on that rock. You know, it's not a crazy notion, you know, to me at all.
Yeah, so it's cool stuff to see. Anytime there's interesting news in space, I at least just want to know about it. You know, it's slow going. You wait years. Even like this crater may have happened somewhere in the last 3 years, they're saying, because they can only get images of certain areas once every couple of years. The last time that area was surveyed or photos were taken was 4 years ago, essentially. So, yes.
Yeah, they don't know when it happened. Yeah, because it's all done in you know, annual, you know, biannual or whatever snapshots. So, like, we're still kind of in the beginning stages of being able to figure out what the hell's going on there. But, yeah, they took a picture, came back around a couple years later, took another picture, and like, whoa, wait, what the fuck happened here?
Yeah. That's where when you pay attention to space news and stuff, these things, I think, will get AI and like what's going on with telescopes and interconnected telescopes that exist, and then, you know, linking to Hubble and more stuff that's out there. AI is detecting all these minor changes so quickly now. I think we'll get to a point where we're able to at least detect a lot of these things closer to real time, as our night sky is just getting surveyed by thousands of telescopes that are all AI connected, that are all looking for a new anomaly from the last time they took that image. It's kind of cool. I think we're really going to get to a point where information, because of kind of algorithms and the amount of data processing that can take place on these billions of stars. And,
it just exponentially ramps up. Yeah. You know, just the technology is just advancing, human advancement so fast. Like, it multiplies over and over. It's not like we're on this like constant incline of advancement. It's a curve, and it's getting higher and higher as we go, you know. And people that don't fear the dawn of AI, you know, if AI isn't just going to take that McDonald's cashier's job away either, like, AI is going to take a few of them NASA jobs, you know, there's going to be less dorks sitting at a computer screen.
So I don't think it will.
Doing scale measurements of topography graphs of Mars anymore. It's going to be a computer rather than 20 dudes in a room with magnifying glasses.
I don't know. I actually think it's going to increase the throughput for that sector, because instead of it being low payoff, you know, you were literally having astronomers. You know, you go back to when they were first finding galaxies and trying to understand the universe. It's literally guys taking pictures, still images, running downstairs, developing that picture, and then just continuously taking pictures and then by hand analyzing every little section of that. Well, now there's computers that are doing it. So the amount of data that we can, the raw data that we can get is going to happen so fast.
So that dude running the stairs is out of a fucking job.
but now there's higher payoff in having more scientists that can actually apply reason and analysis.
But let's be realistic, when we have costs involved in these things, if you had 30 scientists and you can get more done now with 20, they're going to fucking fire 10. They're not going to say, well, imagine what we can do with 30 then. No, they're going to say, look, we're doing more with 20. How about we save the money, fire, you know, 10 six-figure fucking scientists from fucking NASA, get more done than we're getting now, and save a fucking couple million off the overhead budget. Like, it's going to happen.
This is a realm that I think is, this isn't a capitalistic realm. Like, this isn't a cost savings realm. Nobody makes money from these things.
Yeah, you're limited to the budget the government gives you. So if you got fucking $300 million to work with for the year, you're trying to stretch that $300 million as far as you fucking can, you know. And if you can fire 15, 10, 30 fucking scientists and have a giant computer do what they do, you're going to fire those dudes and allocate that money towards a new rocket, or a fucking, you know, the solar fucking sails that they want to use to travel through space. They're going to allocate that money somewhere else if they realize they don't need that anymore.
You're only talking about the government back programs, but a lot of
it's the same mindset in profit driven ones too. It's the same mindset in SpaceX and all these other companies that are
A lot of space research is done in through academia, through different collegiate studies, and that again, that's not a yes. Colleges make a lot of money. There's capitalism surely in a college campus, but the studying and mapping of space has never been profitable. There's just scientists and people doing it because of the interest of science and cosmology and astrology. So that, I don't think, lends itself to cutting the corners
doing
there because of AI.
The people doing it still need to buy food, okay? So money has to be involved in some. No one's looking at pictures of the moon and then going home at night and saying, I looked at a picture of the moon, someone give me a burger. Like, no, this is their job. Yeah. It is their job. It is a job they love. It is a job they're proud of. It is a job that gives them purpose and fulfills certain things in their life. But it is a job nonetheless. And if we're not willing to pay people enough to support themselves with these jobs, yeah, you're going to have the guy that, you know, I'll look at moon pics for 30 grand a year because I love the moon and I'll just eat ramen for the rest of my fucking life. But you're also going to have scientists say, no, you know, I do love science, but I also got into science because it was a lucrative career. And if computers are making it not lucrative anymore, I may just sit at my home and invent something that I can sell to the American public that I'm going to make a mint off of. Like, let's not neglect the fact that people got to eat, Americans are greedy, and money runs the world. Like, it's bottom line. And as AI comes into fold and takes labor out of the whole equation, human labor out of a lot of these equations, there's going to be fallout, man. There's going to be fallout. There's no way you can deny that there's going to be fallout.
No, I'm not denying that there's not going to be fallout. I'm just saying I think this is an industry that's not going to suffer significant losses. Where you're going to see significant losses from AI and stuff is in places that are purely capitalistic driven.
Yeah, how significant?
Space research is in that realm. Nobody's fucking making money because people are mapping the sky. It's just done for scientific endeavor. That's going to continue.
But if you're a little kid right now and that's the job you wanted, you're fucked, kid. Pivot right now, because there's only going to be 15 of those spots left once these computers hit, and you better be one of the top 15, because if not, you're gonna be flipping burgers like the rest of them with your smart ass.
It'll just change. It'll no longer be the people needing to, but there's still going to be plenty of space. I'm not playing doomsday on space research.
Man, they just did an AI test in China, right? They took like 80 of the leading brain surgeons in China, okay, and pitted it against this new AI technology that they developed for reading brain scans. Okay. So they fed 100,000. I don't know the details of the test. Google it. I'll try to maybe put it in the show notes this week. They gave the AI like 1,000 brain scans. And then gave China's top 60 brain surgeons the same brain scans. The computer got through, I want to say, like 80% of the scans. So I don't think either team were able to finish all the 1,000 scans. But the computer got through, you know, 900 of them, and the humans only got through 600 of them. And then out of the 600 that the humans did, they only had 60% accuracy. And out of the 900 ones that the AI did, had an 80% accuracy. That computer's going to put brain surgeons out of work. Or if not put them out of work, devalue their career. So if you're a brain surgeon now making 250 grand a year, but we got a computer that stops you from having to even read brain scans, and they're way better at it than you, that $250,000 career just got cut in half.
So there's a ton of research that shows that not just brain surgeons, brain scans, but like ultrasound techs and radiologists and all that stuff, they're going to become obsolete because because the AI and computers can detect shit the human eye can never fucking see. And there are contrasts that exist within MRIs and X-rays that we can never detect, and AI can do it without.
So you're a radiologist that took out $120,000 in fucking student loans.
You might want to go to night school. you might want to start.
You know what I'm saying? So you got $100,000 in student loans, and in 5 years, they're like, nah, we got Bob the brain scan computer over here. We don't need you anymore. Go home, and you're stuck with six figures of fucking student debt. You're gonna have a bad day. Like, it's not gonna be good news for you.
Yeah. You talk about this research being in China. China is, like, what China's going to do with AI is so far going to trump what we're doing. And they're
not from leading AI people I've listened to. It's a global race right now.
It is a global race.
Whatever China's doing, we're doing. We just don't let people know we're doing it. Like, it's very hush hush.
Sure, it's a global race, right? And China is putting as many resources into it as possible.
As human possible, yeah.
And it is state-sponsored resources going into the development of AI. I mean, they are developing, their new cities are being developed with AI-controlled traffic systems and AI-controlled, everything that they are doing from this point on is to leverage the ability to regulate society through AI and manage AI. So there is no shortage. And then, not to mention, when we talk about where our moral wall is on what we're not going to go past with AI, are we really thinking that China's going to stop there?
Yeah, no, they're not going to stop, because what they already know they're doing with that CRISPR machine, the DNA manipulation technology, what they're doing with CRISPR is, China right now is trying to make Captain China. they are like for real, like, and these are just things we know about. You know, the next generation of Chinese gymnasts are going to shit on the planet with their DNA, you know, manipulated bodies and things like that. I've listened to podcasts, listened to scientists, read articles that scare the shit out of you at times. You know, thank God I've smoked weed for a long time, and it's really easy for me to forget about some of these things. But I listen to some of these podcasts, and you hear these guys talk, and you think about the capabilities, you know. So the fact that it's not 100% sure, or you're kind of not in the know of what's going on, it's easy to kind of pull yourself back from that edge and talk yourself down from it. But if you really go over the edge and think about capabilities, ethics involved, who practices good ethics, who doesn't, who's just, you know, like, it's a fucking scary thought to think about, you know, especially when we talk about, you know, DNA, you know, these CRISPR machines and artificial intelligence. It's fucked up, man. It's really fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just went off the nerd deep end there for a second. We started off in outer space and ended up with robot AI, but, you know, nerd talk for sure nonetheless.
Yeah, somewhere down the road we'll have to, you know, do a show or a cantina conversation with somebody in the AI field.
Oh, I'm definitely looking. I send out emails, I tweet at people, and trust me, if some really smart guy in any of these fields is willing to be a little humble and come talk to two schmucks about this stuff for our audience, I'd love to have these conversations. You know, one of the funnest interviews that we've done so far for me was that Cory Doctorow interview, just because he was such a smart man, and to just unpack his brain right in front of me and ask him questions that just let him go off on tangents. Like, yeah, I'm really drooling at the mouth to get some of these eggheads on our show and let them just regurgitate their knowledge all over our audience. Like, it'll be a great time. That's one of my hashtag life goals. To keep in space a little bit, to go back, and have a little fun with it. Why don't you tell us about Elon Musk's Twitter fail that he had this week?
So, if you follow Elon Musk on Twitter, which everybody should, he's generally good for one or two good ones a week.
So he's one of the smartest trolls on the planet, I'd have to say.
It is great. And he tweeted, I don't even know why he tweeted, but he tweeted Occupy Mars. And it was just an image of Occupy Mars. And at the end of where it said Mars, he had a picture of the red planet. A red round thing.
Yeah, a red round thing.
And so immediately, a lot of people who are in the know on space started commenting that wasn't the red planet that you put there on your Occupy Mars image. It was the orange moon from the eclipse last June. That had the blood moon, and he got made fun of pretty well. And just because he's Elon Musk and he doesn't give a fuck, he just replies with smiley faces and says, "Yeah, moon too. We'll occupy that too."
It's what happens when you eat an edible and you start tweeting too much. Things get lost in the shuffle. But just to know that a man that smart can make a stupid mistake like that makes me feel a lot more self-confident.
Yeah, and I mean, I gotta hope that he didn't create that. You mean like it was a good image, good quality image. Like somebody was in Photoshop making that. I don't think Elon is sitting on his computer at home playing around in Photoshop and making himself images that he can tweet out later. So somebody made that for him. Somebody.
Man,
did that.
Who knows what that dude does after smokes a spliff and he's in front of a computer? Who the fuck knows? This is a dude that loved a game Cuphead so much he just downloaded it to every Tesla on the planet. Tesla now has a racing game
that you can use on the car,
and you can use the steering wheel and gas and brake pedal in your car to play the video game. So we're gonna have assholes.
He said he doesn't want the gas pedal used. If you watch his E3 talk that he did. He clearly says that he sees issues with the gas pedal being used. He doesn't want the gas pedal being used. He said he's got to come up with a different system.
But either way, like, you're going to have assholes parked in their Tesla. I mean, it's actually a really good idea, for a car that takes a while to power up. So if you're down to 50 miles on your ride home and you're like, shit, I gotta stop at a charging station, and it's gonna take you 25 minutes to charge up enough to get to wherever you gotta go, man, that's 25 minutes of gaming now. That's 25 minutes of Cuphead or 25 minutes of Forza with a steering wheel controller in your car on this. I recently rode in my buddy's Tesla. That thing is, like, I've never wanted a car so bad, like, since I was a kid. Like, I am not a car guy. I am not, like, I could care less what I'm driving as long as I'm 6'3", so I just want to be comfortable. Give me some arm and leg room. I don't want to feel like everybody in the car is breathing on me, and I want to be able to recline my seat with a person be able to sit behind me. You give me those things, I'll drive it. I don't care, but riding in that Tesla, man, it was just something else. I want one of them cars so bad, Now... Now I can game while I'm charging my car at a charging station. Like, it's just a genius idea, really, if you think about it.
It's whatever. The Teslas are amazing. I'm way too cheap. I'll settle for like a used Nissan Leaf one day.
So Tesla's been out a while now. You get certified pre-owned Teslas. The Model S starts at like $35,000 brand new, which is comparable to any fucking Accord that you're going to buy, or any of the competitive kind of models. It's only a little bit more, but what you spend more in the new car value, you get back in energy costs. So I'm an electrician, for those that don't know. I own my own electrical company, and I just installed a Tesla charger for my buddy who has the Tesla car, and he says I just talked to him the other day. I installed it about a month and a half ago. He said to charge his car for the entire month to get him wherever he's going cost him $80. So you go from spending what, $400 to $600 a month in gas to spending $80 to power your car. You multiply that over a 3 to 5 year span that you own a car, that makes up the difference right there. Like, no. It is not, like, I think that is a big misconception with Teslas.
It doesn't.
Okay, miser, Ebenezer.
It doesn't, yeah. Okay.
Even if the costs break even, the carbon footprint now, you put a value on that carbon footprint. The minute we ever go to a cap and trade economy, which eventually has to happen, then carbon has a value. And whatever carbon you're not putting into the world, you quantify that value in there, you're in the black. Like, I'm sorry. It's there's no the money attributed to the car now is inconsequential. It's a non-issue now. It really is. It's a non-issue. So I my weekly end here, I guess.
Yeah, this is it for me? No, this is it for me. I'm about to head off on the road here later and go on vacation. So we'll see how much I can stay in touch with the world as I'm out camping again.
Yeah, we already pre-recorded this week's Cantina conversation, so we're good for a week. And next week's news episode, we'll find out Ken's reception. There might be a guest host next Monday.
but yeah, that's it for us. With this being the end of episode 19, just want to remind everybody to please support the Nerd Cantina show here. So, and what that means is, hey, subscribe and like us on whatever platform you are currently listening on. That is still one of the best ways to support us, and it takes about 5 seconds of your time to do so. So if you just journeyed through ramblings for an hour, hey, please add 5 seconds to what you've committed to us and go ahead and just subscribe and like what we're doing.
Yeah, and also, again, we shake our soup can every week trying to get that buck. We have the Patreon page. You can go there. We're playing around with the tiers and whatnot to try to give you guys some interesting things to participate in. So if you can head over to our Patreon page, drop a buck in that coffer for us and help us out, that's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and through Patreon, we're continuing to try to grow what we offer, what our site is doing, and what we create, and original things that we create. So through Patreon, you'll stay up to date on those things, and as we roll out products and services, the patrons will be the first ones to know.
Yeah, I'm going to order some stickers this week, and I think we're going to do a limited free sticker sent to you if you sign up as a Patreon. So even if you only give us a buck, I'm gonna put a sticker in the mail and let you let you get a nice Nerd Cantina sticker. I think that's going to be my next venture. We also do have a merchandise page. If you are a fan of Nerd Cantina and you want to let your friends know and you want to rock one of our nice Nerd Cantina shirts out at the movie premieres or at your local pub, we encourage you to check out our merchandise tab and pick one of those up. You know, if it's too hard to hit that share button, you can just wear it and just wear it out proudly.
All right, well, that's it for us. Thanks again, nerds, and maybe I'll see you next week.
All right, nerds, take care. Skynet is real.
Real quick, we just wanted to mention one of our favorite new apps, which is PodCoin. So assuming that because you're listening to our podcast today, that you happen to be a podcasting nerd. And if you are, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to get paid for your time.
I'm a big fan of getting paid to do stuff that I do in my daily routine. Anyways, I have signed up for all the rewards programs possible. And with PodCoin, you actually get paid to listen to podcasts. So every minute that goes by that you're listening to your podcast, you are throwing away potential money.
So go ahead, download PodCoin app on either through iTunes or through the Google Play Store. And when you sign up with the promo code NerdCantina.
One word. That'll get you 300 free coins towards your account. and get you on your way to earning that first reward from either Amazon gift card, Target gift cards, all kinds of things. You could also donate your coins to your favorite charity that they offer. If you're going to be listening to podcasts anyways, you might as well get some free stuff for doing it. So download the PiCoin app, put in the code in the Nerd Cantina, get your free coins, and start earning money while you listen to our show.